Hello and welcome, everybody, to yet another edition of Nerd Stash Presents The Long Box Hunters. I am your uncanny host today, Tristan Benz, joined, as always, by my astonishing co-host, Drew Garrison. Drew, how are you feeling today?
Well, I'm feeling very astonished. I did not know that the Arbiter of Culture was going to give me another title.
It's my job to dole out the titles, you know, as the Arbiter of Culture. Some would say that's my mutant power, the ability to dole out titles.
Well, you certainly have a knack for it, my friend. Maybe they should hire you on the comic we're talking about today.
Maybe they should, because I got a question about some of these titles. But let's go ahead and get into that. Y'all read the title of this episode, I assume. We're talking about the X-Men today. No specific story. We just wanted to sit down, talk about the state of the X-Men in the comics, and, you know, a little bit at large with where they're positioned in the MCU with the new show on Disney Plus and all that corporate synergy that you love and or hate, depending on who you are. But before we get into all that, Drew, what comics you been reading?
Well, I have actually been reading The Fall of X. My favorite one has been the one that centers around Storm. Her and Magneto just recently had a pretty cool event that happened in the comics. So
I'll tell you what. I assume you're talking about Al Ewing and Luciano Vecchio, I believe it's pronounced, Resurrection of Magneto?
Yes.
What a series. Al Ewing doesn't miss when it comes to Storm and Magneto. Like, I am sad for a couple reasons with the ending of the current X-Men status quo, but probably the biggest one is that Al Ewing is not going to be writing those two characters anymore, because this is the best they've been in decades, in my opinion.
Yeah, I really love how stuff has been going. I think my only current issue with it was that they revived Magneto younger, and I get it, it's just to keep him alive, because dude has been, like, de-aged three times by now, but I kind of wish it's like...
You gotta keep Magneto around! We need that master of magnetism. How do magnets work? Who knows?
But only he knows.
Yeah, damn right. Exactly. I too have been reading the Fall of X, you know, among my usual pull lists. In terms of going back and reading old series, I've still been reading a lot of Batman, read some Icon, you know, read some Elektra. Elektra Assassin by Frank Miller and Bill Sienkiewicz. That's a
ooh.
What a series that is. And Bill Sienkiewicz's art, it's just on another level that I can't even describe. And you know, reading some mid-90s Titans, actually. Read the Chaos War, I believe is the story. Let me pull it out here. Total Chaos, that's what it is.
I was about to say Chaos War was Marvel.
Chaos War is Marvel. This is a different. This was with Donna's son coming back as Lord Chaos, and it was a whole thing coming back in time. So yeah, that's what I've been going through. Now, Drew. Yeah. What comic or continuity factoid cracks you up, just off the top of your head?
So this one is hilarious to me, and it is an X-Men one. But during the Ultimate X-Men, there was a point where Magneto and Charles invented the Savage Land, and I thought that was hilarious to think about. Because all I can picture is Magneto using his magnetic powers to just make it, and Charles being like the supervisor there, and like always
wearing a hard hat shaped like his helmet.
Yeah, but also because of the person Charles is, he's always like going there to try and pick up something heavy, and Magneto's like, Charles, please stop.
It's like I got this, Chief. I'm the master of magnetism. Don't you worry.
And Charles is like, I'm supposed to be helping. And he's like, you are. Stay right over there and you'll help.
Yeah. That experiment really did not work out for Charles in the end there, did it?
No. I love Charles, and he does have like light telekinesis, but he can only like lift himself with it in the Ultimate Universe. He had no way of helping Magneto create that thing, and I just laugh every time I think about them creating it together.
You know, also, you've inspired me, pulling from the Ultimate Universe, a fun little factoid from the Ultimate Universe that I enjoy for the X-Men, is Mystique is just the name of Professor X's cat.
Oh, yeah.
Do we ever get Ultimate Mystique?
I don't think we do.
I don't remember, but I don't think that we do.
Yeah. Hold on. Keep talking.
Keep talking. I'm going to check this out. Because now that I'm thinking about it, was she his lover at some point?
I think that's in an alternate universe where they had a kid and everything. And also, she apparently
traced. That was a thing.
Yeah, but I think that's Wolverine and Mystique's child. It was Xavier Jr. that was Mystique's child.
Okay, yeah, no, she was, in fact, in the Ultimate Universe. And she was also Charles's former lover there. So there we go. Look at that.
Oh. See, I always thought, like, the reason why he called the cat Mystique was that it's gonna be revealed, oh yeah, no, she's a shapeshifter. She just, like trolling all of you and everything.
I mean, I'll be honest, having Mystique pretend to be a cat for the entirety of the Ultimate Universe living in the Xavier Mansion would have bothered me and a lot less and entertained me a lot more than the way they had Jennifer Lawrence's Mystique just be Charles's adopted sister, you know?
Yeah. It always was weird that connection was there but never mentioned in the original movies.
I mean, there's a lot of connections that were weird in the X-Men Fox movies and just never mentioned, but that's a whole other podcast. We got to talk about the current connections they have going on. Otherwise, we'll be here all day. So, as we mentioned, today's topic is just a general, what's going on with the X-Men? So, with Marvel Comics' Krakoan Age of X-Men coming to an end this summer, we wanted to take a look at what's on the horizon for the Merry Mutants. And with longtime Avengers editor Tom Brevoort joining the X office, it seems that Marvel, for better or worse, is ready to re-emphasize the X-Men before their upcoming debut in the MCU.
Which is really bad, because now we have an idea of what the ending's going to be. Thanks, Marvel.
You know, hey, man. Announced at South by Southwest, they got a whole new slate of X-Men series coming up. Only three titles have been confirmed with creative teams. That's Uncanny X-Men by Gail Simone and David Marquez, X-Men by Jed McKay and Ryan Stegman, Exceptional X-Men by Eve L. Ewing and Carmen Carnero, and we've got a few teases. They teased a few logos, but we don't have any actual information on those series. So those series are X-Factor, X-Force, NYX, Phoenix, Storm, Wolverine. There have been rumblings about what's going on with these, rumors, speculation that we might get into a little bit, but nothing hard or confirmed. Uncanny X-Men will be following Rogue, Gambit, Wolverine, Nightcrawler, and Jubilee in Louisiana. Once again, the X-Men are a team of outlaw heroes, you know, looking to protect and find new mutants. X-Men will be featuring Cyclops, Magneto, Magic, Beast, Psylocke, Juggernaut, Quentin Quire as well, and the character Idi Okonkwo, who was formerly known as Oya, will now be known as Temper. And then
that's a weird name change.
Yeah, it is a weird name change. I think it's because she has powers over like hot and cold, so it's like tempering metal or something. I'm not quite clear on it. I prefer the name Oya, but you know, it is what it is. And they'll be based in Alaska fighting for a mutant's future against new threats. And then we have Exceptional X-Men, which will be focusing on Emma Frost and Kitty Pryde, or Kate Pryde. It's unclear on whether or not they're calling her Kitty or Kate in this new era. They're introducing a few new mutants that are pulling Kate back into the fray after she's sort of moved on from a life with the X-Men. Seems like she's going to be a little bit traumatized or burnt out after the events of Fall of X, and who can blame her? But Emma's going to be pulling her back into the fray to help with the new characters Bronze, Axo, and Melee, and they all seem like interesting characters. You know, with Phoenix, we assume could be Jean Grey. You know, I've seen some speculation that it'll include multiple Phoenixes, or who knows, maybe Rachel Summers will be involved. I hope so. I love Rachel, also known as Ascani these days.
Yeah, and maybe they'll finally do something with Hope, who's supposed to be, like, the mutant messiah.
She's been, Kieran Gillen's been doing what he can with her in Immortal, you know. That's his character's kind of his baby, but, you know,
yeah.
We'll see if that... that attention maintains after the fall of X. X Factor, nothing really said about it, not even really any rumors, I don't think, at least not off the top of my head, but X Factor is typically either a government-sponsored X team, or it's like a more low-key detective agency team, who's to say. With Storm getting her own solo series, there's speculation that she'll be running for Congress. It seemed like that was teased in the Women of Marvel preview issue that came out a few weeks ago. I have opinions on that, that I'm sure we'll get into. But,
also, who is she running for Congresswoman? Because, like, if she's running for Congress, it's like, under what state or what? You know what? Never mind. We'll figure it out eventually.
Yeah, we'll see. NYX. No details about that. It was a series in the early 2000s that focused on a group of homeless teen mutants in New York. I think that's where Laura Kinney first debuted in the comics. There's some speculation that this will involve Kamala Khan's Ms. Marvel, which could be interesting. X-Force, it's usually like a team of harder-edge mutants. A strike force, if you will. No real info on that. Wolverine, the only information that I can think of that we've seen about Wolverine is potentially Greg Capullo drawing it. The rumored creative team for this one that I keep seeing come up is Greg Capullo on art and Salad and Ahmed writing it, which I enjoy Ahmed's work. Love his Black Bolt. I'm enjoying his current Daredevil run. And I mean, with Greg Capullo back at Marvel drawing Wolverine, like I am very, very down for that. So, Drew, before we get too deep into this, I want to take a step back into the era we're currently in right now. So what's your overall history or relationship with the X-Men, just as a whole, as a franchise, and how you feeling about the Krakoan Age now that we're nearing its end?
I've liked the Krakoan Age. I have admitted that the X-Men have acted a little villainous, and I've wanted them to, like, step back and remember that they're heroes, not, like, a strike team or anything like that, or worse, when it comes to, like, one of my favorite characters, war criminals. We'll talk about that later. But I have enjoyed the Krakoan era, especially because I believe that it could lead to interesting stories with the X-Men and everything. But I did have a feeling it wasn't going to last. This isn't going to be like when they were on Utopia and that was just where they were at and it's a location that they live in. But it's still something interesting. I liked how they just went on and just, like, said, okay, let's just stop pretending that characters are going to be dead. Let's have a resurrection machine and everything. I liked the use of mutant powers to create this paradise for mutants. And I like the idea. Of a mutant nation. Like, I've always liked the idea. Just didn't always like how it was executed. The Krakoa Nation was executed near flawlessly. Not to mention a lot of interesting X-Men villains becoming recurring characters that you just couldn't wait to see and everything. I honestly think they didn't do enough with that. Apocalypse. But, yeah, like, I really have loved the Krakoan era of the X-Men, and I've always loved the X-Men. I think my first X-Men was the 90s cartoon, but I grew up mostly with X-Men Evolution, and that helped me get into the X-Men comics, and it just, like, I've just been a fan ever since.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great way to get into it. I know, for me personally, I also grew up watching X-Men Evolution, but even before that, I was watching X-Men the Animated Series on VHS because my parents were big fans of it. I remember commercials for, and stop me if you remember this, but a VHS collection of episodes from X-Men the Animated Series just all about Wolverine. And it was like, oh, X-Men, yeah. The Legend of Wolverine. Like, I had that VHS, so I was obsessed with that, obsessed with X-Men Evolution. The first X-Men comic that I really, like, collected, and I collected in trades, but it was Ultimate X-Men, And for a while, that was like my touch point for the X-Men in the comics. And, you know, when I started collecting single issues instead of just trade waiting in high school, I was in and out. You know, I got a lot of the Marvel Now stuff. It fell off heavy during Inhumans versus X-Men era, as did everybody. And the Krakoan era really brought me back to picking them up regularly. And I fell in love with it. Creative teams, the directions, the very concept I was interested in. I agree with you that, like, for a lot of they weren't necessarily acting like heroes. They were acting a bit more sinister. But at least when Hickman was in charge, that seemed like that was the point. Like, it seemed like it was going to be a story about the flaws, you know, when in building an ethno state, for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
Like, it was supposed to be like, hey, you know, maybe this isn't necessary. Like, it's great that they have a place, but, like, nation building is dirty work. Like, it's not necessarily going to be the same sort of, you know, hey, I'm a flawless hero. That, not that the X-Men have ever been flawless heroes, but you know what I mean. It's harder to keep your hands clean. I mean, how many times have we seen Black Panther put into a box where it's like, okay, now as a king, he has to make some hard fucking decisions where it's like he might have to cross a line, but that's his job as yeah. a ruler, as the head of this nation. And that was something that was really interesting to explore with the X-Men that I don't think we got to explore enough, or really with that much substance, I'm sorry to say, after Hickman left. That's not to say that the stories weren't entertaining. And in some cases, we did get a bit of that intrigue. We got a decent amount of it with Karen Gillan's Immortal X-Men. And, you know, again, like a hell of a lot with the nation building for Arako in X-Men Red by Al Ewing. I can't sing that series praises yeah. enough. I mean, that's 100% one of the standouts of this era. But yeah, overall, I was a big fan of the Krakoan era, and I am sad to see it end in what feels like a bit of a whimper as opposed to a bang. Especially now that they've already announced these upcoming series. It's just, it feels rushed the way it's wrapping up. It feels like they're trying to get it done quickly so they can get out the new series for brand synergy with not just their upcoming appearance in the MCU, but even just Wolverine coming out in Deadpool and Wolverine in the MCU with his yellow costume. And now all of a sudden Wolverine switched back to his yellow costume, or, you know, with the X-Men 97 animated series debuting as of recording last week. And now I will all go and say absolutely fucking crushing the show rips. So I can't even,
yeah.
I was prepared to be a hater because like, oh, it's, they're just taking it back to the 90s and like ignoring, you know, character growth and the comics are going to do that. But I'm going to be real. There's some problems with it for sure. Like with the way they are glossing over the important dynamics in Sunspot's origin. But yeah, I tell mm-hmm. you what, that show rips. I am salivating for the next episode.
And the episode 2 cliffhanger.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. What a show. I mean, it's not a cliffhanger if you know, you know. Like we know. We're not gonna spoil it for anybody, but like, you know, we got an idea of what's going on.
It's what the Fox movies wanted to do before they got bought by Disney.
I mean, look, I got a Funko Pop sitting here on my shelf that has already confirmed what's going to be happening in this show, because they'd be putting out merch too early. So I'm locked in for X-Men 97. Not necessarily crazy with how it's potentially affecting the X-Men in the comics, but, you know, we'll see how it shakes out. I will say, moving on to our next topic, just how do we feel about these creative lineups overall. Like, good creative teams, for sure. I mean, I love Gail Simone. I just actually, today we were late recording because I went to go pick up some mail, and that was the final volume of her Birds of Prey run that released this week. They finally collected it, so I went to go pick that up because I love her Birds of Prey, love her Secret Six, love her Wonder Woman run. She's great with team dynamics, and I'm really looking forward to seeing specifically how she writes like Rogue and Gambit. I think is going to be great. And Dave Marquez, I mean, One of the best artists in the game right now. I hope he stays on Interiors for a while, because I feel like it's been a minute since he's been on Interiors super regularly. So I look forward to hearing about that, or seeing more about that. And then the main X-Men team with Jed McKay and Ryan Stegman. I mean, you know, McKay's been killing it. You know, everyone mm-hmm. loves his Moon Knight run. Everyone loved his Black Cat. His Avengers has been solid. It even made me tempted to pick up the Avengers series, which is unheard of for me. I was like, damn, am I going to add Avengers to my pull list? Am I going to be that guy? I didn't, but I thought about it for a second, and that in and of itself is very impressive. And, you know, Ryan Stegman. It's nice to see him drawing something that's not Venom, because I don't care about Venom, but I want to enjoy his art.
I will say, The Impossible City is pretty solid, and you know me, I am not a fan of Sam Wilson Captain America, but...
I know you're not! We've had a few conversations about that.
Mm-hmm. But it's like, it is solid.
Yeah, and I've read a bit of the first arcs, you know, writing about it for a Screen Rant, so I've had my finger on the pulse of the Avengers, and I'm liking what I'm seeing. And this is, if I'm not mistaken, I think people were saying this is the first time that a writer has been writing both the main Avengers book and, like, one of the headlining X-Men books. So, like, there could be. It seemed like they were teasing maybe this will eventually lead to something. I don't know. I'm very interested. Very interested.
Look, all I want is a team that is highlighted, that is the X-Men and Avengers team just teaming up. I know that's the Unity Squad, but it comes and goes, and it's not...
Like a comic million. Never feels like a headliner, either.
Yeah, it never feels like a headliner, because I remember when I was doing The Fall of X, I was like, oh, wait, the Unity Squad's back. Why wasn't this advertised?
Yeah, well, I mean... I was one of the seven people following the the Uncanny Avengers series for follow-backs. I personally I did enjoy it. In very interesting lineup for the Uncanny Avengers. But to your point about it never really feeling like a headliner, it's interesting because when the Uncanny Avengers first debuted, like right after Avengers versus X-Men, you know, right at the start of Marvel Now, it was billed as, like, this is the flagship Marvel title, right? Like, they were making a whole big thing out of it. Like, this is the flagship of the new era. And I personally enjoy that series. Up until a point. Everything before Axis. Like, everything dealing with the Apocalypse Twins, I'm into. Anyway, back to Uncanny Avengers not feeling like the flagship. It was launched as, oh, this is the flagship book. But unfortunately for it came out at the same time as Hickman's Avengers, which I mean, just blew it out of the fucking water. Like,
yeah, it's not even his fault, because Uncanny Avengers was actually really good. It's just, you can't beat Jonathan Hickman.
You're not gonna beat Jonathan Hickman, especially not when he's leading like the flagship book with Avengers and New Avengers that brought back the Illuminati. It just, you know, it's unfortunate.
And was basically setting up what was, in my opinion, the day that Marvel should have rebooted. Like, he was setting up the reboot of the Marvel Universe.
Nah, man, that's a whole other episode that I think we've recorded. So, and put out. So we'll leave that for another time. But you were saying how you would like to see in this lineup a more, a more unified Avengers Unity Squad.
Yeah, like that is just my whole thing. It's like the X-Men have been a part of the Avengers for a long time. Ever since Captain America rebooted the team from its original roster, there have always been X-Men and mutants a part of it. And yes, I still count Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch because they are mutants. I do not accept that they are not Magneto's kids. That will never ever.
I won't count Scarlet Witch as an X-Men character. To me, she's always more of an Avengers character. But Quicksilver, I mean, he was on X-Factor for the longest time, so I think we can count Quicksilver at least.
Okay, but yeah, then there was Beast, who became part of the Avengers. Rogue, Wolverine is literally on nearly every team. So
too many teams, if we're being honest. I'm glad they've paired that back in the Krakoan era. That's one good thing I think we can say with the way they've done Wolverine. Like, he's not everywhere. As overexposed anymore. Like, he was on X-Force, and he was in his solo title. and maybe he'd pop up elsewhere, but he wasn't, like, you know, on the cover of every book like he was in, what, like, 2015, 2016?
Yeah. And I think longer than that, because I do remember him being on both Avengers and X-Men back in the 2000s, so...
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. That's true. But, yeah,
but, you know, the books were good then, so...
Yeah, but that's all my only wish. My only wish is that we get a unified team. I don't care if they're called Avengers. I don't care if they're called X-Men. I don't care if they're called AX. Axe. Ooh, actually, yeah, Team Axe would actually be cool. But I don't care what they're called. I just want a team of Avenger X-Men working together consistently.
We'll see. Maybe that's part of what X-Factor is, you know? We haven't had a real... Since the Unity Squad was a thing, we haven't had, like, a standard X-Factor. I think Peter David's X-Factor, which essentially was considered to be X-Factor Investigations, I believe that was still running when Uncanny Avengers debuted, and then I don't think we got another... Did we get another X-Factor until the Krakoan Age? I don't know that we did. Off the top of my head, we had, like, tons of X-Forces and whatnot.
Yeah.
And mutants and all that jazz, but...
That's why I'm worried about answering, because I can't really... I don't know if I'm thinking X-Factor or X-Force.
Well, I'm just going to say that we didn't have another X-Factor until we got the Krakoan Age X-Factor. And with, you know, the X-Factor... The classic team of Havoc and Polaris and Strong Guy and all them, with them being a government-sponsored X-Men unit, I could see them folding some type of Avengers Unity Squad situation into that. And I'd be interested in seeing it. The announced title Summers that I the have, the one announced title that I don't have as much of an opinion on is Exceptional X-Men by Ewing and Carmen Carnero. Seems like a solid team. I haven't read much of Ewing's work, but everyone who has said anything about the title, at least the chat online, is like, oh no, like she's great. So that seems promising. I like that they're introducing. Well, I have mixed feelings on them introducing new mutants, because we already have so many young mutants that just don't get any attention at all and haven't since, like, the year 2003. But, you know, everyone complains about, like, oh, stop re-swapping characters, make new characters. Like, all right, well, they're making new characters, so, you know, that could be interesting. I'm a little unsure how I feel about the basic premise of... It starts off with Kitty's, like, or Kate has now, like, working as a barista, like, trying to leave her mutant life behind her. Like, I get being burnt out after the Fall of X, and she's killed a lot of people, but yeah. I just have a hard time buying her turning her backs on mutants for even a second. And clearly that's where Emma's gonna come in. She's gonna be like, hey, get off your ass, like, let's go. But I'm looking forward to seeing how that exactly plays out, because right now I'm not entirely sold on that notion.
Well, I do remember, like, during the Fall of X storylines, we do get some hints that Kitty is, like, not okay with all the lives that she's been taking, so I'm pretty sure they're gonna go for a PTSD angle with it, and
I can see just, that.
Yeah, and it's like, it's not like she's trying to turn her back, it's just more of it could be like she's freezing up, or she's having nightmares, or it could be a combination. Yeah, it's just like,
well, and I only say to turn back because at the panel at South by Southwest, they were using phrases like she was leaving it behind or whatever. So if she's just having a trauma response or she needs a break, that makes total sense. But the idea of Catherine Pride, like, saying, you know what, no, I'm done, like, that does not ring true for me.
Yeah, you can't really take away Kitty from the X-Men. It's like she's one of those characters who became such an integral part of it that when she's not there, you're wondering, I wonder what she's doing through all this.
And even when she's away, she was on Excalibur, which is, you know, also with her, with, like, Nightcrawler and Rachel Summers, like, she's, or later Doug and Wolfsbane. So she's almost always involved in mutantdom. I mean, even when she I can't remember, the was it Mechanics, was that her little miniseries by Claremont where she went to college? Even there she was involved in, like, mutants right things, and she was hanging out with Karma. So, like, Kitty's gonna find a way to be involved with what the mutants have going on. But since we're focusing so much on this character, I do want to bring up, are there any characters that you feel like you're missing? Because I know you say you want to see, you know, another Unity squad, but like, are there any characters you're missing? Any other books you'd want to see? Or are there any creative choices that you're particularly hyped about or like kind of bummed about, like not really feeling?
Well, it looks, well, from the artwork, it looks like that Magneto's going to be taking Professor Xavier's role in a way, like literally in a wheelchair sort of thing. I hope that's just an artistic flair where he's just sitting in a chair, but it kind of looks like he's taking over.
I feel like I've seen concept art with him standing up.
Okay, so yeah. Well, he could also fly. It's like, I'm just wondering, like, how they're going to make this work. Because I just, even, like, if Magneto can't use his legs, I just don't see him being in a wheelchair type of thing. But that would be a good role reversal. Professor Xavier's the one that can walk, and Magneto's the one who has to use a wheelchair.
I mean, assuming Professor X isn't, you know, the Prisoner X or whatever that's locked in the X-Mansion.
That is true. He is supposed to, like, have a Sinister in him right now. As for characters, like I said, Hope Summers is, like, the mutant messiah. I always question where she is, and at this point, it's like, I'm not always a fan of, like, killing off characters, but it's like, I feel as though because of her importance to literally the mutant dumb, it might be best to, like, kill her off now. It's just hard to, like,
that far.
Here's the thing. If she's around in any capacity, you're always questioning, where is she during this time period? Because she's literally, not figuratively, literally the most powerful mutant to exist, because she has all the mutant powers at once. So it's always hard to, like, think, okay, where is she at the moment? It's like other characters, it's like, okay, they could be away, they could not be able to help. With her, it's just too hard to explain where she is at that moment. So that's my one thing with her. My other thing is, like, the other character who I have a bit of a problem with is just because I figured out how they're gonna end the story because of the design. It's Beast. We have young Beast taking over old Beast, and how they massacred my boy.
Say what else would they do with current day Beast? There's no real coming back from everything that he's done. They're not gonna just let him run free with the rest of the X-Men. The X-Men wouldn't want him to run free with them.
Retcon it to where it was Sinister taking over his head. I would have accepted that.
I don't know. That's lazy. How many people are we having Sinister taking over? You know, and this is a trajectory that Hank's been on, like, since he gave Threnody to Sinister in the 90s. So, like, you know,
disagree with that. We gotta talk
whether or not we like it. You know, whether or not we like the direction he's growing in. It was character growth. It was an arc.
See, I still disagree with that, but that's something we will talk about later. My whole thing is, like, it just feels like a betrayal of his character, especially what he's stands for. It also is one of the things of comic books and the trope of the nice character can never stay nice. Like, eventually they have to do something super atrocious, unless they are, of course, Superman or Captain America, the only two who have ever been able to escape this trend. And even then, they tried turning Captain America into a Nazi for a bit until they said, nope, that's an alternate universe. It's not him. It's like a literal cosmic cube creation alternate universe. So it's just one of those things where it's like, ugh. Did you have to? It's like, of all the interesting storylines he had going on that you guys just
What other interesting storyline did he have going on other than his just consistent, like, downfall and moral failings? I mean, he fucked up the timeline, even aside from the Threnody stuff, like, just going and all the Legacy Virus stuff. Like, he had he brought the past X-Men to the modern day, fucking up the timeline, consistently playing God. He worked with the Illuminati, helped blow up planets. And that's not me, you know, only knocking him. All those characters, like, that was a big part, that they were failing morally and they were being corrupted. And then, yeah, you know, every step he took, like, working with the Inhumans instead of the mutants during Inhumans versus
X-Men. Okay, hold up, collaborating for Secret Empire,
like, I don't know, man.
Okay, hold up with the Inhumans and everything. That was him trying to study the cloud and everything, and he didn't side with the Inhumans. What he sided with was trying to find a way of saving the mutant race by moving them away from the cloud. He did not want to go up in a fight. He explicitly said this should not end up in a war or a fight, and kept trying to convince both sides, let's find a non-violent solution to this, and no one listened to him. I will not let that slander for the Avengers versus Inhumans. That was.
There's plenty of slander to go around for Inhumans versus X-Men. It was a bad series. It was a bad time.
It was.
And then, you know, fine, even ignoring that, then you add in Secret Empire. He's working with, you know, Hydra Cap for New Tian. And sure, Emma Frost is too. But Emma Frost has a history of being evil, kind of. Like, and I love Emma, but, like, sometimes she's, she's not afraid of it.
But they were also forced to. It's like I said, hey, don't work with me. I will wipe out all of mutants. And it's like, Emma knows.
Sure, but I'm not saying that he was gung-ho with it. But I am saying Hank's trajectory of the last few decades has been a history of moral compromises that eventually led to a moral degradation.
I just don't feel like it was. I feel like he was the one in a forced to make hard decisions and everything, but that's at the same time what we try to put.
And those hard decisions changed him. Like, I'm not saying he was always evil. I'm saying it's been a slow build because he's kept getting into these situations. Like, all right, well, now you got to do some shit, Hank. You know, like it's felt very organic for me, his downfall, but we're getting a bit in the weeds.
Yeah. It hasn't felt organic to me. It's felt forced to me, but I could be fanboying. I don't feel like I am though, so
I mean, I don't know. I tell you what, it felt more organic than Hal becoming Parallax, and I was on board with Hal being Parallax.
That's weird, because I felt like Hal becoming Parallax did feel organic, it just felt rushed.
It happened in 3 issues, and then he in the course of 3 issues he's like, yeah, I'm the greatest Green Lantern of all, and then he destroys the entire Corps. That's a bit more drastic and force than anything Hank has done over the course of the last 30 years, even if we want to just take it back from the 10 years since Marvel now, like, that's, you know, but whatever. Anyway, anything else, any other story choices that you're hyped or bummed about?
Hyped about the Phoenix, hyped about Storm, even if we don't know a lot that's going on with their characters at the moment, or what the stories are going to be at the moment. Wolverine, like, it's a Wolverine book, I'll check it out. And besides that, just bummed that Apocalypse is going to be back in the background and everything. I honestly felt like he was the character that in this entirety of the Krakoan era, it's like, okay, let's see what Apocalypse has. It's like, oh, they're talking about his lore and everything, his past. I wonder how we're going to explore Apocalypse and his past around his time of getting up to the present day and everything. It's like, oh, we're meeting his kids. And then he like literally flops off to another dimension. And
whole upcoming like Heir to Apocalypse miniseries leading into From the Ashes, where it's stated that he'll be leading the mutant society on Arrakis, so like he's choosing a successor to continue his work on Earth. So there's still the potential that we will get more Apocalypse after that, you know, seeing what he's got going on Arrakis with the rest of his people from
Well, I did not know that, so I'm excited for that then.
Well, damn, Drew, how are you going to be on the comic book podcast if you're not keeping up with what's going on with the X-Men?
I've been keeping up with what's going on with the X-Men, but I'm not looking at 15 different websites to figure out what's happening.
I didn't look at 50 different websites to see what's happening either. It just popped up on my feed, and they announced it on several different websites.
I only got the stuff for Uncanny X-Men, the X-Men, Exceptional X-Men.
Oh, they announced that.
All the titles
we're
talking about.
Oh, no, they announced this like before they even said anything about From the Ashes. Well, before they announced any details for From the Ashes, because I don't know if we mentioned that. This whole new relaunch is called From the Ashes. But no, they announced they put out solicits for, and not even with the regular monthly solicits, like they announced the Heir to Apocalypse stuff as its own thing, like a few weeks before South by Southwest, before unveiling the teams. Like this is old news, Drew. It's old news, older than Apocalypse himself, some would say.
Really?
Yeah. Well,
I get the joke, but really?
Yeah, really. I don't know. I've got mixed feelings about this these story choices. I don't necessarily like how it seems like we're going back to the traditional status quo of, oh, mutants are outlaw heroes, hated and feared, you know, fighting to protect a world that hates them. It's like, all right, I mean, yes, like, I like them being heroes, but, like, I don't know. It feels, at least so far, just from these announcements, and again, these are all solid creative teams, so I'm sure they're going to be putting out great books. This is just me talking about the status quo. It just feels like they're taking them backwards just for the sake of brand synergy. Like, it's clearly inspired by the 90s. That's clearly the angle that they're trying to cash in on with the upcoming hype in the MCU. And it's just another one of those instances of brand synergy where they decide to change the comics to reflect either what's in the movies or what's potentially going to be in the movies. And that never really seems to draw in new readers. Like, it just gets on the nerves of the people who are already reading the books for the most part. You know, it's just, yeah, like, all right. And it has led to, you know, it can lead to good storylines. I'm not saying that this is going to be bad. I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer. It just feels a bit more regressive than I would like from the X-Men. And then even looking at the promo image, like, there are so many interesting characters from this era that are missing, characters that got a spotlight that never had before that we probably aren't going to see for a while. Like, I don't know, like Frenzy, Sync, you know, any sort of character like that. And largely, you know, characters of color and women, like more diverse characters other than the same classic mutants that you see all the time. Like, looking at this promo image, we have 1, 2, 3, at least between Uncanny X-Men and the standard X-Men, only 3 mutants of color. Mutants of color, and to the credit of Exceptional X-Men by Ewing, it seems like all 3 of the new mutants that they're introducing are diverse, but like they're people of color. But it's just like, okay, we're just going back to the standard, like, oh, these are just the X-Men, these are the marquee characters that people care about. We'll see, you know, how much attention these lesser known or lesser served characters get. Now they have said, like, these aren't the full lineups, so I'm hopeful that we'll see, not even necessarily like, oh, I need them to be people of color, but just mutants you don't see as much. Like, even if Uncanny X-Men wants to do Hope Summers, you know, because we don't see Hope that often. Like, just, we've got so many mutants, and we always go back to focusing on the same, like, 20. And that's why when we talked about Exceptional, I'm like, all right, well, it's cool that they're bringing in these new mutants, but we'll see if they end up getting attention, because we already have so many mutants that don't do anything. When's the last time you saw a Knoll, Drew? What's a Knoll up to?
I have no idea.
Exactly. You know, what's Dust got going on?
Oh, God, I have missed her. She's one of my favorite mutants that never gets attention.
Yeah, she's really cool, you know, but where is she? Last I heard, she was on, last I saw, she was in Legion of X, but since then, what's Dust got going on, you know? Armor?
I think she was I do love Armor.
Where's
for
Armor?
Dust, you know? I do remember.
She's killing Dust, it in Ultimate X-Men.
For Dust, I do remember, because she was actually, at the, Hellfire Gala that was attacked, and, and apparently she's fighting against Saturnine alongside the Asgardians.
In Realm of X?
Yes.
Well, all right, well, there we go. See, look at that. Okay, so, but you had to strain to think of that, you know?
Like, I did.
That's just, if the characters aren't either on the X-Men animated series or from the Chris Claremont run, you're probably not going to see them as much, you know? Like, yeah. It's just, and by from the Chris Claremont run, I mean, like, Nightcrawler, Colossus, and Kitty Pryde. Because every other one of the big X-Men were on X-Men the Animated Series, you know? You just got that, and Magic. Magic, I will say, had a huge breakout moment after Marvel Now. Like, that, she really popped up there, so she's a mainstay now. And then yeah. Emma Frost is always going to be there, because she's too fabulous not to be. But then past that, it's just like, alright, pick a name from the bag, and we'll see which random ass character we're ignoring for the next 5 years until someone's like, hey, where's you know, Johnny Laser Nipples. And it's like, oh, we're bringing him back in this special issue. Shout out to Johnny Laser Nipples.
That can't be a real character. I remember
no,
that
it's
character.
Not. It's not, but, you know, I'm making a point. So, you know, I'm a bit bummed about, like I was saying, I'm a bit bummed by what seems like a return to just a, I guess, generic status quo, but I don't doubt that these will be good books. Like, I can't stress that enough because I don't want people thinking I'm just being a hater. It's, yeah, like, these are all great creative teams. Like, Gail Simone is legit one of my favorite, like, team dynamic writers of all time, so I'm looking forward to that. It's just, this status quo, I'm hesitant as to where it's going to go, especially with like the rumors of Storm running for Congress and the preview image of her in the Women of Marvel, like with the little mohawk, straight and choppy again after we've had what, 4 or 5 years of her finally being drawn with textured hair in a mohawk form that looks badass. Like, if you're that sold on the mohawk, just keep it the way it's been. It's just, I don't know, it's regressive. Like, why would she go from being what was once essentially the Queen of Mars to now she's, like, representing New Jersey in the House of Representatives or wherever the hell she's going to run for it? Like, what, it just, I don't know. It's going to have to be a damn good story because I'm that, I don't know. Like, she can't just go back. Here's my fear, at least with Storm. And I heard, I think, Connor Goldsmith on the Cerebro podcast talking about this. She was such a big part of the Claremont run, right? Like, she was essentially the main character for 17 years. And then in the 90s relaunch, writers just didn't really know what to do with her that much. So she was kind of just there, you know? Like, she was still on the teams, but she was just there. And then in the mid-2000s, then it just, she essentially, we've talked about this, just she just becomes a Black Panther character for a while. Like, she's barely with the X-Men. And she comes back in the post Avengers versus X-Men era, but she doesn't really get that many like lead stories from the character that was once the X-Men, you know? Like, she had her mini series, she was on Uncanny X-Force with Sam Humphries, but it wasn't like a big headline like, hey, we're really delving into what's making Storm tick in the way that Al Ewing has been doing specifically. This is, I would argue, her best few years, like her best period since the Claremont era. So the idea that we would go from this big sweeping narrative where, I mean, her powers have reached heights I feel like we haven't seen from her before, and that's saying something as she's an Omega, but it's like she's just been on this upward trajectory of political power, of personal power, like of mutant power. And the idea of her just going back to, you know, all right, now I'm just gonna play politics in Congress. It's just like, I don't know. It feels like such a downgrade, and I just don't want her to go back to just, you know, reflecting the 90s of like, oh, well, she's there, you know, instead of being like, no, like Storm should be as center stage in the X-Men as Cyclops or Wolverine. Like, she yeah. should be there.
In truth, with Storm, when she, I know you don't like the, her and Black Panther being a thing, but I always felt like her and Black Panther getting back together and moving forward of making like their nation everything would eventually result in like the Marvel mutants like either moving to Wakanda or getting a nation similar, like a nation near or inside Wakanda and everything, because I just felt like that was where the trajectory was going, because, you know, Storm would never ever abandon like the mutant race or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like,
unless they were the Morlocks. she kind of forgot about them for a few minutes.
Yeah.
And then the mutant massacre happened. It's like, oh shit, I was in charge of them. Which, I'll admit, a little bit funny, you know? Like, she makes the whole big thing about, I'm in charge now, Morlocks. I just beat the shit out of Callisto. And like 20 issues later, she's up in the match and she's like, oh shit, they're getting wiped out. I should go get involved.
Yeah.
It's like you leave the house with the stove on. It's like, no, Storm, like, you were supposed to be watching them.
So sad. But, yeah,
but you know, it's paid off with X-Men Red. I think that's been a big part of it, where she's like, no, I'm not making the same mistake twice. Like, I am taking an active leadership role in this.
Yeah. And that's been cool to see. But it's like, I think the biggest problem is like the most problem we've had in comic books, everything. It's like, characters cannot either stay dead or retire. and or grow. That's yeah, or grow. And yeah. So it's like they have to stay in the same place and everything. It's like in a way, think of Cyclops. He's actually one of the characters who had a growth that felt like he was moving towards different directions. He was opposite to where his self was. Then it's like when, as time kept going on, everything after his death and everything, it was like the moment he's revived, all that growth is like now reverted for him to be back into his Boy Scout.
Well, I'll have to disagree with you there. I think Cyclops is one of the few where I'm like, okay, no, like I see like this tracks for me, because remember when he comes back in Matthew Rosenberg's Uncanny X-Men, where it's like everyone got sent to the Age of X-Men or whatever, so it's just him and Wolverine, and at that point they're just fighting to survive, and he's like, I come back and we're almost dead again, like I fucking told you. He calls out Captain America, you know, at that rally, he's like, get the fuck out of my face, Rogers, like I'm back, and once again, we are near extinction, so, like, I don't want to hear shit from you. So, the last, you know, few issues or whatever in between that and Krakoa is him just struggling to keep the mutants alive, and he had an arc of, like, damn, like, I made some mistakes before I died, like, you know, I probably shouldn't have murdered Charles, which, I don't know, you were kind of right. Scott, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, Scott. Retcons really hurt Professor Xavier's character.
Yeah, but then you get to the beginning of Hickman's X-Men, and he has that exchange with Polaris where he's like, yeah, like, I mean, shit, man, like this is everything I ever fought for. Like, and it was hard, and we made some missteps along the way, but like this was the dream that Charles sold me on, like, what we fought for, it's here. I can finally, like, chill out for a minute. And I think that's more what it was in Krakoa, less his character getting regressed and more, like, he's finally getting the chance to be, like, happy for 5 minutes, you know? Because, like, when has that ever happened? And clearly, it did not last. And from what we're seeing with what's going to be coming up in X-Men, like, I'm not saying he's going to be back to being as radical as he was in Uncanny, but
oh, doubt it.
But he seems like he's back to being pissed off, which I enjoy a good pissed off Cyclops. I think that's one of the best Cyclopses. When he's out there, like, no shit, like I'm irritated now. Like it seems like he's going to be a bit more proactive with the X-Men, which I'm looking forward to see.
Because I kept because I keep hearing like people like go back and forth. Is the woman Quanon or Psylocke?
Quanon is Psylocke.
Okay.
She Betty. Took the Psylocke name. Betsy. Once Betsy, you know, got her white woman body back, now she's Captain Britain. So,
okay.
Quanon just is like, yeah, I'm fucking Psylocke now. Because, everyone just assumed Psylocke was the Asian woman in the cool, like, ninja swimsuit anyway. So, like, you know, them going back to calling her Revanche, like, I don't know how well that would have landed, even though Revanche, badass code name. So yeah, she is just Psylocke now.
Okay. Yeah, I can understand that. And I'm trying to figure out, but it's like the hair was more whitish, so I was kind of wondering
if the hair no, you're not wrong. In that promo image, like her hair does look whiter, similar to how like Betsy Braddock's is that really, really light purple. But then I've seen in other like interior art, it's like, no, that's her hair's the way it normally is. So I don't know what the colorist was up to there. But now that we've talked about how we feel about, you know, the general status quo, I do want to ask before we wrap up. So this all these lineups, the general status quo, how does it make you feel about the overall direction for the X-Men and the mutants, since it seems like they're, you know, once again positioned to become a major Marvel media staple? And I mean this in terms of, like, you know, the how you feeling about their new status quo in the comics, how are you feeling about that with the show, like with the potential for the movie, like what are you feeling right now? Now that the X-Men are about to once again become a household name.
Well, I'm going to do comics last, but the MCU, I'm just going to be straightforward with it. I'm burnt out on the MCU. I kind of, it's not something I'm looking forward to anymore. And it's like, I honestly have not been keeping up with it. I know that Deadpool and Wolverine is coming out. I don't even know if I'm going to see it or not. With the show and everything, like, good God, 97 X-Men. We said it at the beginning. It's so good. It is like, it started out amazing. I love where it's going. And it's like, that's all. It's just everything you needed in an X-Men. Anything. Like, anything, really. It's all you need in an X-Men anything. As for the comics, it's like, them going back to the original status quo is weird. It is weird, no matter how you put it, because they have been through some shit. And holy crap. I just don't know where you would put the where you would put the X-Men trying to go back to their roots and everything. Feels like something that they wouldn't do after literally their nation got attacked and blown up.
Right.
So it's like
they wouldn't try and restart it, you know? Like they wouldn't.
Yeah. This is like something like where they would they would put it back together and everything, maybe have different rules, maybe, or just do something, but it feels like going back to them just
Go to Araco, you know?
Yeah, go to Mars and everything, which I would find hilarious considering that was Beast's first thing in Humans vs. X-Men. It's like we could colonize Mars.
No, that is funny.
Yeah. But that's all I believe really needs to that's all I think. Like, it'll depend on the writing, because again, I'm excited for stuff like, look at Juggernaut's new costume, holy crap,
it's good costume. It looks awesome. I will say, pretty much all the costumes, like, even though they're clearly, you know, riffing on the 90s stuff, like, all the costumes are good.
Like, no, you can't say weird that Jubilee has knee pads. That's
no,
totally,
but it's
not
very
the 90s.
Like, I am a big fan of Jubilee's new look. I'm like, this seems appropriately retro enough while still feeling modern. Like, this is some shit Jubilee would wear. You know, yeah. I'm into it. Kitty Pryde's fit. I don't know. It's just like that classic yellow training suit she always wore for the longest time, but now blue, like her classic Shadowcat look. I think I'll have to see more of it in the interiors. So that one I'm not sure on, but like, you know, Ileana back in her dope black suit, because I haven't been feeling her gold fit. Cyclops, I'm liking his new outfit. It looks like a mix between his 90s look and his Grant Morrison, Frank Quitely, new X-Men look. Logan. Yeah. I realized, you know what? I guess I did kind of miss the yellow on Logan. I love the brown outfit. Don't get me wrong. Like, I think that's still probably my favorite Logan outfit. But it's like, you know what? This is, it's nice to see again, you know?
Yeah. And I don't know her new coin. I can't keep forgetting her new coin, so I'm going to call her Oya. Oya is one of the new characters that has been getting a lot of love, and I do like that. I wish we saw some of the other lights, because I actually had an interest in a few of them, but yeah, that was just
What's up with your girl Transonic?
I know, right?
Where's she?
Trans had some of the most interesting character designs with her powers and everything.
It was a real cool character design. She looked like if Fox Mystique from like the early 2000s like got turned into a Terminator, but like a T-1000.
Yeah. Yeah, not to mention that she had the mermaid look, which was pretty cool. She could transform into more aerial look. It's like she had a bunch of different transformations that just made her so cool.
Yeah, transforms cool.
Yeah, but yeah, it's like, I guess like I said, it's gonna have to do with the writing and everything. I'm gonna have to accept that my boy Beast is like now like a war criminal and everything. And
this is Young Beast. He's not a war criminal.
Yeah, I know. This is young. Yeah, now we've got young Beast and everything. I hope there's a storyline around that. Just him, just like, because it's like, I feel like that needs to be like fully addressed.
I mean, have you been reading X-Force?
I have been reading X-Force, okay. And yeah, I've seen what's going on. It still feels iffy to me. But it's like, again, it could be me fanboying and just being really mad that, again, another character I liked, who is supposed to be a good character, just cannot be allowed to, like, just be nice. They have to have some blood on their hands. But yeah, I'm excited to see what's going on. I think the only character I just don't care for is Quanon. And yeah, I get, like, she's supposed to be, like,
Psylocke. I mean, did you read Hellions?
I think I glanced over Hellions once.
Well,
but
there's
like,
your fucking problem, because she was. I tell you what, Hellions. I'm like, damn, this is what sold me on Conan, because I'd never read her stuff as like Revanche before, like in the 90s. So in my head, you know, Betsy was always Psylocke, but reading that, and to a lesser extent, Fallen Angels, it wasn't that good, but like there was some interesting stuff with her in there. But her stuff in Hellions, I'm like, damn, okay, like I'm locked in on this character now.
Well, I also like, I guess I also do have the question of like, wasn't she part of like the Yakuza and everything? Has she not tried to go back?
That's part of the Hand, and it's just more like
the Hand,
like a servitude thing. But I mean, you know, Elektra was also part of the Hand. Wolverine was part of the Hand. Like, if we're judging people based on what, you know, evil organization they used to be part of, Rogue was in the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, you know, and
okay,
Magneto,
yeah, but I know,
seems
like,
to be leading
I know,
the
like,
team
the character that. Development that led there, but from what I remember, Quanin literally was, like, dead, then came back, and now she just doesn't return to the Hand?
No, she'd left the Hand before she died.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, I mean, she joined the X-Men for a bit, like, after the body swap. And, like, she and Betsy were both on the team. Like, they were both X-Men. That's when she was Revanche.
Okay. I did not know that. Like I said, I'm not a huge Quanon fan, but there could be more that I'm just missing out on. But we'll see. We'll see. I do like this team lineup. And again, the costumes are dope, and I'm not sure if Magneto's paraplegic or not. It feels like they're trying to get that out of iconography, but whether or not they do it, I don't really care, because it's like, it's Magneto. You know he's going to be boss.
Yeah, I mean, he's the master of magnetism, you know? You can't get any cooler than that. As for how I'm feeling, I don't know. I will say X-Men 97 being so good has made me feel better. I was ready to just talk shit about 97. Like, I was still going to watch it, but I just thought it was going to be like a lazy nostalgia, you know, sort of product. I'm like, damn, they actually went in on the show. Yeah, they actually tried. And I was like, okay, shit. Like, you know, I stand corrected, and I was very happy to be wrong. So if that's the level of care that they're overall putting into this brand synergy we're about to get, like if the quality of X-Men 97 is indicative of the level of quality that Disney as a whole is trying to put into the X-Men from now on, then I'm excited about it. Like I said, these are all good creative teams. We beat to death, you know, how I'm feeling about this new status quo. So I am open to being wrong. I'm very, very much hoping that I'm wrong. Cause like I said, I mean, these are all great creative teams. I don't think I'll ever get to a point again where we were at with Inhumans versus X-Men, where I'm not reading X-Men anymore. Like I don't think that'll ever, be the case. But we will see. Well, folks, that has been this episode of the Long Box Hunters. If you want to hear more from me and Drew, then you're going to want to check out our link trees in the description of the episode, with links to all our socials. Drew, what are your socials?
I am Drew_Garrison. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram.
There you go. And you can find me at BackIssueBins on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. You can also check out my Screen Rant author page, which is linked. You know, I get paid per view. Drew has a YouTube channel that is also linked, if you want to give that a gander. When you're done giving your boys some support, why don't you support the Nerd Stash at large, you know? But yeah, so we appreciate y'all listening. We will be back sometime in the future. We usually record every 2 weeks. Don't know what we're going to be talking about. Drew, do you have any ideas what we're going to be talking about?
I mean, we could talk about another indie book if you want, or we could like do another Invincible run, since Invincible's going on right now.
We'll see. I don't know. The sky's our limit, everybody. Why don't you come back next time? And then you can see what we're talking about with you lovely, lovely folks. Have a good one.
Peace.